For those of you who are watching us on the web, because yes, you can watch radio this year on the web. We've got more cameras than we know who to smile at in here. It's very exciting. So you might have noticed that we have a new guest in the room. Minetta Gardner is a University of Iowa professor, but she's so much more than that. Minetta, welcome to EAA Radio. How are you doing today?
Great. I just came from Dayton, Ohio yesterday and got my car power washed on the way through with the weather.
I bet.
And landed here last night, and here I am.
Well, and you are a director of the Air Race Classic, which is really what we brought you in here for. Yep. So the Air Race Classic just ran. Aren't you glad you didn't have this kind of weather?
Absolutely. Our weather was much better this year on the race than it was last year.
Last year was a minor disaster in a lot
of ways. Lost a lot of stops last year that got canceled. This year we lost two stops, LaGrange and Hattiesburg, for weather, but flew the rest of it, and it was a fabulous race. We were up in Canada for three stops.
For the people who are listening who don't know what the Air Race Classic is, can you tell us?
Sure. It's a four-day, VFR-only, daytime-only, all-women pilots air race. And we typically have anywhere from 115 to 125 women pilots flying across the country. And as I say, it was international this year, going up into Canada.
Where did they start from?
Started in Jackson, Tennessee. And because those two stops had weather-related issues, we flew direct from Jackson over to Bryan, Arkansas, and basically headed up north towards Wausau, Wisconsin and Minnesota. And crossed the border. We did a flyby in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and landed in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada, for clearing customs. And then flew over to North Bay, Brantford, Ontario. Ended up 30 minutes from Niagara Falls in Welland at Dorothy Runsling Niagara Central Airport.
Oh, sweet. That makes so much sense. Is this the first year you did international?
No, they've actually flown into Canada twice before.
Okay.
It's always been just a terminus, so it's kind of a hop over the border, land, clear customs, boom, you're at the terminus. And this year my feeling was, if you're getting the paperwork to fly in Canada, then why not fly in Canada?
Oh, I like that philosophy.
Yeah.
The route different every year?
Yeah, the route changes every year. So one of my roles on the board of directors is I design the routes. So once I get a start and a terminus, signed up on contract to host a start and a terminus for a race, then I can begin to start to put the race together. I keep a long list. I actually have a long list of stops that are interested in participating. So I try to take a couple off my list as anchor points and then put the route together from there.
So it's not done with a dartboard?
No. Ah. It kind of looks that way sometimes. It does.
That I would understand, but I think you start years in advance.
We don't do too far in advance. About try to get the routes settled about 2 years out. Starts and contracts, we try to starts and termini, we try to get under contract 3 to 4 years out.
Okay, so you got a start and a finish, and then you start working on which way in between.
Yeah,
I understand that. Always in the summertime.
Always the third week of June, right after Father's Day, is how to remember it.
Now you have a whole section of this that's for collegiate. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we all fly together in one class. We have a competitive class. Everybody flies both collegiate and non. And then we have a non-competitive group, and that's where experimentals can fly in that, or people that just want to try out the race, but they don't want the stress of being competitive. But otherwise, about a quarter to a third of the teams are collegiate.
Well, something I'm curious about is that how do you keep the airplanes separated? Is it time that does it, or what?
Everybody's watching out for everybody. We all take off. When we all take off at the start, we're only about 30 seconds apart on the takeoffs. If it's a towered airport, the tower can space us. But generally, we just take off and we're out of there. And the first stops are really congested. They're really busy. And ADS-B helps a lot for watching where traffic is. That's helped tremendously.
Wow, that's really incredible.
I can imagine. And for weather, too, because this is a VFR race. And so weather is really critical. One of the other things you need to understand is each racer is racing against their own handicap, right?
Right.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, what we do at the beginning of each year with getting ready to race, what happens is we fly a handicap race. So you go out with a handicap pilot, you fly full throttle, and you fly a square box at about 6,000 feet pressure altitude.
6,000?
Yeah. And okay. So you fly a square box and you about 3-minute legs. And from there, you have a tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting monitored all along that route. And what it's doing is it's monitoring your speeds, and you're flying full throttle to get your top speed.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it allows you to get your top speed on all four legs of that square box, and it basically allows you to average out for winds, crosswinds, tailwinds, headwinds. And so that's your handicap speed, and you're looking to beat that speed for as prolonged a period of time over the route as you can.
Yeah.
And what does the finish line look like? Where did it end up this year?
So it ended in Welland, Ontario. Again, it's a small airport near Niagara Falls. And you know where the timing line is at each airport, so you're coming in about 200 to 400 feet above the ground, flying your top speed, and then once you cross the timing line, you're off the clock, and you can fly around to cool off, collect your wits. And when everybody lands and they get out of that plane at the terminus, it's a party. About the terminus is usually about 5 o'clock, and at 6 o'clock we have our meltdown party. And I can tell you,
I love that you call it a meltdown party.
Yeah, it is meltdown.
What do ladies think of it after? I mean, especially the ones that have never run the race before. What kind of comments do you hear from them?
It is an experience of a lifetime. It really is. I mean, the first race I flew, I just remember getting to the terminus, and it's like, you never have that feeling again. You may fly the race year after year, but that first race is just, it's a series of firsts for you on the race. And I think when you get on the ground and you realize what you've done, that you've really flown, you know, 2,500 miles across the country, you know, and you could go mountains to, you know, desert to whatever, you know, and it's just, it's a sense of accomplishment. And I think this year with the Canadian stops, having more than one Canada stop, my goal in setting up the route this way was so that when racers finished, and a lot of collegiate teams, I mean, this was their first international flying experience. And so I wanted them to walk away from it feeling like, you know, I know how to fly. You know, I could do this again. I could go up to Canada on a trip, you know, because they had kind of repetitive experiences flying from one airport to the next. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just accomplishment. And
I think that would be particularly true of the collegiate set.
Yeah.
And do you find that the collegiate racers become racers, air race classic racers, later on when they graduate out of those programs?
They some of them do come back, some of them we don't see again, and that's true for all of our racers. For some, it's a bucket list experience.
Okay.
But for our collegiate teams, some of them come back a few years later because they're not in a position to afford to do it. They're collegiate racers, they do get some support from their schools oftentimes, which makes it possible for them financially. If they're connecting with airlines, getting a 2-hour or 2-week block of time to do the race in a future year, sometimes they have to wait a bit. But we had Lauren Steele, who flew with Purdue a few years back. She came back and flew the race a couple years back and stuff. So we do see people come back, and that's a lot of fun.
I can imagine it's true. You know, Rob, one of the reasons this is so cool is because since you're racing against your handicapped time, you have to figure out a way to work the winds and the weather to your advantage. And yeah, you're going to keep your plane clean and topped off and stuff like that, but you need to know what altitude your airplane's going to fly best and what power settings, and we're talking higher power settings,
right,
generally
right.
speaking,
yeah.
that, you know, that you're going to do things at. And these are all skills that translate later on for these kids,
right.
I think.
So usually it's one experienced pilot and then a newer person in the other seat, or?
It's all over the map. Actually, the first race I flew in 08, we were both rookie racers. And we actually did not meet one another face-to-face until we got to the terminus, and we never flew together until the start of the race that year. That was kind of an extreme case of it, but there can be, usually somebody has a bit more experience, so there's a pilot and a co-pilot. One of them has to have 500 hours PIC or a current instrument rating. The other person in the left or right seat has to have a minimum of 100 hours PIC.
See, so they're working on safety. They want an instrument-rated pilot in there, even though it's not an IFR race. And or, that's very, very important.
Yeah. Or they can have 500 hours.
So, there you go.
Yeah. So it's either 500 hours PIC or an instrument rating. But either way, it's more experience on that one.
Mineta, where can people find the Air Race Classic? Do you have a booth here on the field?
Yes, we're in Hangar B, Row B, and the booth is 2022, I think.
Okay, and
it's
then,
right next to the right next to the 99's booth, so we're right next to one another.
Oh, very cool. It's nice that they're co-located. And then on the web for our web listeners, since we're out on the internet, where can they find you?
Yeah, it's www.airraceclassic.org.
Yes,
airraceclassic.org.
And you guys are a nonprofit. That's a big, big deal.
Yep.
Mineta Gardner, thank you so much for taking the time to come over to EAA Radio, because I know you struggled to get here, and to talk to us. It has been fantastic learning more about the Air Race Classic, and we want to welcome you to EAA Air Venture 2019.
And it's been great. Thanks for the invite. We hope to see some racers out there. We're going to be flying from Grand Forks, North Dakota to Terre Haute, Indiana, through about seven or eight different states. So we'll look forward to seeing racers next year.
Thanks for joining us.